The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Bill Myers.
10 minutes after 6 on Wheels Up Wednesday. How the heck are you? Yep, that means we're going to talk with Eric Peters, automotive journalist, here a little bit later in the hour after the 6:30 news. And we're going to talk about some problems in Toyota. And, you know, you almost would never, ever hear problems about Toyota vehicles. But now the story is coming out that we got some issues going on. And of course, a lot of it is because of the compliance car. Eric will have that story coming up for you after 6:30. We'll also talk about the latest review. I'm trying to think, what did he, let's see. Oh, it was the Mini Clubman, I think is what he reviewed. I was reading that the other day. And that's another one of those vehicles that if you wanted to pick one of them up, it's a lot of fun. But it's also going to be discontinued at the end of the year. There's a lot of swan songs going on in the automotive world right now. And we will discuss all of that, all the good fun stuff, and all of the incredibly boring EVs that they're still trying to shove down the gullet because in spite of the fact that nobody wants to buy the EVs, the product development cycle on these things, it's like they're working on these cars 5, 6, 7, 8 years in advance, and they're working back off of the plans that were made during the peak Tesla grift with Elon Musk. And Elon still continues to even now make more money from selling carbon credits, credits that wouldn't exist in any sane market, but they only exist because of the government grifters, the government policies, that sort of thing, to force people either into not cars or into cars that nobody can afford and or buy. But we'll kick that all around coming up. Joe County Commissioner Bairdsugar back for a quick touch-in and still getting bad reporting, he claims, about what he's either done or not done on various policies. And so he's going to counter another newspaper article story on him that he says got that wrong. We're also going to talk with State Senator and Secretary of State candidate Dennis Linthicum, and maybe the absurdities are finally starting to collapse. I don't know. Then we're also going to talk with the QUX technology guy that I had on a few weeks ago. I just thought it was so interesting that trying to knock down the fraud because the story is out there that big banks are really starting to crack down on paying off for fraud. In other words, they're not paying off or finding every excuse possible for not paying off. And there's a new fraud that I heard about that is quite interesting that that a person I know about was affected by. And this is through the use of artificial intelligence. Now, remember those scams that you would get? In fact, I remember I got some from Pete Belcastro. Remember Pete Belcastro, the sports guy here in Southern Oregon? I would receive these fake emails spoofing Pete. And it was saying that he was traveling over in London and that I'm trying to think of how the story went. This was, it was about 2-3 years ago. And it, how did it go? Oh yeah. I'm stuck here in London. I got arrested and, you know, and I need money to get myself bailed out. And I know you've helped me in the past, Bill, and we've been good friends for a long, long time. And I'm thinking, well, this sounds like Pete, but it doesn't, right? And so I think if I recall correctly, I called up Pete and said, Pete, you're still around here in Southern Oregon, right? Oh, yeah, I'm here. Well, there's somebody from London pretending to be you and looking for money, or they're looking for Amazon gift cards. There's all sorts of other ways that the scamsters are doing this kind of stuff. Well, the latest wrinkle is that they break into your email account. The scamsters find a way to break into your email account, and then they run your emails through artificial intelligence. And they run the emails that you may have saved from your contacts through artificial intelligence. And then what they do is that they write the scam letters using the artificial intelligence of your contacts so that it looks and sounds and appears on the read to be your friend. And then they send the scam saying that, hey, we need your, you know, we need, you know, help from you because we're stuck in, you know, Jackson County Jail or whatever it is. And please help, you know, those kind of things. And I was reading a story about how one person was being taken by that. And the friend's name was Ann, and was ready to send the money until she saw that Ann, the fake Ann, artificial intelligence created Ann, had an E on the end of it. And Ann, her friend never used that. But other than that, you would never have mistaken the conversation and the choice of phrases for being anything other than her friend Anne. And it's quite interesting. That is the latest wrinkle in the scamsters. You know, the problem is that the banks are now getting to the point where they're saying, hey, if you authorize this, you authorize this. And even if you didn't authorize it, well, it looked like you authorized it. And we're not going to pay. This has been happening, accused of the big ones like the Chases, the J.P. Morgan Chases, and the the Capital Ones and various others. And anyway, we'll talk with the QUX technology guy because he's working on really getting lockdown encryption identification that is not based on government ID. And so we'll talk with him more about that. I think it's a pretty important story. It's kind of a you and your money and keeping a hold of you and your money. Needless to say, though, if people are calling you up asking for money, just say no. I'm sorry, you're on your own. Right? That kind of thing. Hey, another interesting story. I'm trying to get super confirmation on this. The story is this morning, Speaker of the House Mike Johnson was in Southern Oregon last night. I had this on good authority, and apparently Jackson County folks ended up looking into it, and it appears there was some truth to it. I don't really have any details. I don't know if Speaker Mike Johnson was coming to check out what's going on at the Rogue Valley International Airport, or if he was dropping in because he heard the food at Diner 62 is really good. Who knows? I don't know. But I have no information on why he was here. I don't know if there was maybe some fundraising or getting together with some movers and shakers and the people that could write big fat checks for the reelection funds. Maybe there was some kind of event going on that I am unaware of, because certainly I don't have the funds to be writing super big fat checks. Maybe you do or maybe you don't. I don't know. But did anybody have eyes on him? Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson? 770-563-3770-KMED. I didn't see him, but I just heard about it. But it was just as I was heading to bed last night, and I haven't seen much other reporting on that up to this point. If you know something, let me know, or if you had some eyes on it. I'd be curious to know if it was a political visit or if it was just something involving maybe examining programs at the tanker base, let's say, over wildfire concerns or something with the airport. Hard to say. But apparently he was here for some reason, and I don't know what that is. And if you do know, let us know. 770-563-3770-KMED. Interesting. As crazy as Governor Tina Kotek is, every now and then the liberal stop clock can be right twice a day, you know, that kind of thing. She actually came out and said something sensible. Now, I know. Governor Tina Kotek tells Willamette Week that she is against Initiative Petition 17. Now, this is the November ballot measure that we're going to have a chance to work on that would raise corporate taxes about $7 billion a year. It'd be yet another gross receipts tax on top of the 1% gross receipts tax we already have. So when people say we don't have sales taxes, oh, we have plenty of sales taxes already. But anyway, what they would use this gross receipts tax to do is to send every Oregonian a $750 check each year. And Tina says, I'm opposed to this ballot measure, Tina Kotek says. It may look good on paper. She says it may look good on paper? Really? Okay. But its flawed approach. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, so she's not against this on a matter of principle. She says she's against this because it would punch a huge hole in the state budget and put essential services for low wage and working families at risk. Okay, so she's not against it as a matter of principle, just taxing corporations that don't make money to send $750 a year to people just because. Right. So she's not against that. She's against it because she says it would hurt the current state budget. So no doubt. Governor Kotek would be perfectly happy with raising taxes, the corporate activity tax, put another 3% on top of it or whatever it is, as long as she got to keep the money and she got to dole it out instead of the guy behind Initiative Petition 17, which should go down in flames in a sane world. But this is Oregon and sanity. Oregon and sanity do not, the two don't meet all that often, okay? Israel Defense Force announced the death of the Hezbollah commander behind a drone strike that killed 12 kids and teenagers over the weekend. And Shuker, I guess, is his name, also known as Haj Moshen, Mormosin, joined Hezbollah in 1985, also sought by the U.S. government over to his connection to the 1983 Beirut barracks bombings, which targeted the U.S. Marines. If you were old enough to remember that. He also served as a senior advisor to the Hezbollah leader at the time of his death. Died in an IDF strike Tuesday, southern Beirut. Done. Na, 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 na. Hey, hey, hey. Goodbye. Okay. They had another hearing on the Secret Service. We'll talk a little bit about that as the show goes on this morning. So we have Ronald Rowe, who is the acting Secret Service guy, showed up at the Senate yesterday to take questions about the failures that allowed, well, you know, the nutcase to get on the roof and then fire 8 shots at Donald Trump, hurting him, killing Corey Comparatore. And Rowe followed the same kind of strategy that Kimberly Cheadle tried. And he did say, though, that he couldn't, you know, he couldn't back what happened, why, you know, it did. It was just another excrement show. He cannot defend why the roof was not better secured. I think the real issue, though, is that there's pretty good evidence that he was involved in kind of reducing the security detail for Trump, and they were getting in on him for that, too. A lot of conversation. You'll hear the national shows beating that up nonstop today. That's just the way that goes. But he says he cannot defend it. All right, but do you think we're ever going to see any real accountability? I have my doubts. In other political news, a new poll shows Kamala Harris, 5-point lead over Trump in Oregon. I can't exactly say that's all that surprising. Nigel Jaquis over at Willamette Week says that President Joe Biden beat former President Donald Trump in Oregon in 2020 by 16 points. So they say. Now, in 2016, the Democrat nominee, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, beat Trump by 11 points. But the first publicly released poll on the likely matchup with Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris shows a narrower margin, just by 5 points. Does that mean Trump's in play? Don't know. Don't know. It could be. 5 points is a pretty big deal. The communists in Oregon tend to retreat to their corner when the time comes, or they'll coalesce around, no matter how dim the particular Democrat is. As long as there's a D next to the name, that's where it goes. In a head-to-head matchup, poller Tim Naschiff of Hoffman Research found that Harris, the Democrat, leads Trump Republican 49-44%, 7% of voters undecided. If Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Green Party candidate Jill Stein make the ballot, they'd each get a small slice of that vote, probably 7% for RFK and a percent for Stein. But the margin between Harris and Trump remains unchanged. Now, Naschiff says it is closer than I expected. 5% is something that could happen, we'll know that Oregon is in play when Donald Trump comes to visit. And I know that people call me up and say, well, Bill, why doesn't President Trump call? Because, well, Oregon's not in play. And he's only going to spend money on places where he thinks that he can move the needle. That's just smart campaigning. It'd be great to just have them show up just because. But they don't do it just for a social call. It's, can you get enough votes to make it happen? And, you know, visiting Southern Oregon, yeah, he'll have Southern Oregon pretty much wrapped up. No problem. I mean, we're going to go for Trump big time. It's not too big deal about that. It's Multnomah County, northern part of the state. Pretty simple stuff. And if we think that he can move that needle, then we'll see him. Other than that, nope, we won't. Rogue Valley Times had a story. I'll tell you more about this in just a moment. They got into that SRO, you know, the police officer at South Medford High School story that we were talking about with Michael Williams, school board member. And some interesting statements coming out of the school board. Oh, they don't like Michael Williams. Michael Williams should be sitting down and shutting up and knowing his place on the school board. I'll share a little bit of that coming up. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Ready to upgrade your roof to a durable, sleek metal option? Look no further than Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. With our state-of-the-art SnapLock machines, we bring precise and efficiency right to your doorstep. No need to worry about transporting materials. We come directly to your project property. Visit StephenWestfallRoofingInc.com and discover the ease of quality of metal roofing done right. Transform your home with Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. Call today, get an estimate tomorrow. 541-941-3736.
We're Barn in the USA at the Del Norte County Fair. Head to the coast in Crescent City for an action-packed fair with entertainment for the entire family, including livestock shows, carnival rides, car shows, and delicious fair food. Thursday, enjoy Super Diamond in concert. And Friday, it's rising country star Abby Anderson. Saturday is Challenge of Champions Bronx Bulls and Barrels, and an after-party with the Moonshine Crazy Band. Sunday, it's Monster and Tough Trucks and the Livestock Auction. For all the details, go to dnfair.org.
Just how clean is your water? Here's a note from Grants Pass Water Lab. The best and the only way to know your water is clear of bacteria is to have a professional water lab run an E. coli test. E. coli is famous for making people really sick, but it's also an indicator of other bacteria, protozoa, and viruses. So ask Grants Pass Water Lab to test your water for E. coli. Find locally owned, independent Grants Pass Water Lab online at gpwaterlab.com.
Life hack number 7, get an iPhone 12 on Straight Talk.
Life hack.
Here's how it works. You walk into Walmart, go to the electronics section, ask for iPhone 12 with 5G and a dual camera system, and select a new Silver Unlimited plan. They'll smile because it's a good plan. You get real unlimited data all for just $20 a month for the whole first year. Get it at Walmart or StraightTalk.com. Straight Talk. Less dollars, more sense. Taxes and fees apply. Requires activation of iPhone 12 and a new Silver Unlimited plan or higher end auto pay enrollment. $25 a month service credit applied for up to 12 months if eligibility requirements are met. For network management practices, visit StraightTalk.com.
Do you owe the IRS back taxes you can't afford? Are your finances underwater? First Response Resolution in Eagle Point solves tax problems. Their CPA will represent you with the IRS and defend your rights as a taxpayer. Visit FirstResponseIRS.com to schedule your free consultation.
Hi, I'm Steven with Steven Westfall Roofing, Inc., and I'm on KMED.
627. Follow up on a story that we had last week when I talked with Michael Williams. And just to catch you up with what was going on, Michael Williams is a member of the Medford 549C school board who had some issues, or at least was under the... Well, I ended up talking with the former SRO, the school resource officer, Officer Josh Doney. And apparently he's well-loved among South Medford. Parents like him, kids like him, good communication, everything works really well. And, of course, he's in charge of making sure that the school stays safe, the school resource officer. Well, he got reassigned back to patrol. And then you have the district coming out with this statement, along with Medford policing. Oh, this is just absolutely perfectly routine. And, you know, I kind of fell for that hook, line, and sinker at first. And then the more I heard about this, the more it seems like, no. Now, Occam's razor is there's kind of a cover-up of some sort of a little bit stinky, and I was wondering if the problem was that Officer Josh Doney was committing the grossest faux pas of being involved in any kind of government situation, and that is telling the truth when people don't really want to talk about the truth. You'd rather have nice little press releases that say everything's just fine, nothing to worry about, and move along here. So anyway, Andy Atkinson, Road Valley Times, ends us up talking with Michael Williams again. I think I'll probably have to get Michael back on, too, because we had a great conversation last week. And he said, yeah, I think there's some real problems here. But so they had that joint statement that was put out June 23rd, kind of like this is the, the cover up letter, that sort of thing. And Williams, who said he was speaking on his own behalf and not for the school board, he also said that on my show last week, too, said the champion statement contrasted with claims that Officer Doney's reassignment was merely routine. Yeah, that sort of thing. Williams said his efforts to talk to teachers included a conversation with Doney in which the officer voiced concerns about district policy pertaining to firearms in schools and how such incidents were handled. And Williams said Doney drew heat for shining a light on the district's failure to protect students, and that Havanier, who is the security guy at the school, took issue with Williams talking to faculty. Now, see, this is really interesting. In other words, don't talk. You're on the school board. You're elected, but you're not supposed to talk to people. And actually, I've talked to other people on school boards that are told the same kind of BS. Although that may be the rules here. Okay? This is the part of this, and whether, you know, we have some violence problems in South Medford, and they're not and they're doing restorative justice and doing everything, trying to keep the dirtbag kids in the schools rather than cut them loose where they need to be. They should be out of the school, you know, that kind of thing. Whether or not, you know, we can have those kind of arguments. But I was intrigued by a statement in this Rogue Valley Times story about Michael Williams, and it came from Medford School Board Chair Cynthia Wright, who suggested that Williams is unclear about his responsibilities as a board member. I remember one time having a conversation with Williams and him saying, I really like being in the details and going in there and really being a part of the school community. This is a statement from Cynthia Wright. Wright said that, according to training that board members receive through the Oregon School Boards Association, that is exactly the opposite of what the role of a school board member is. We have to stay a little farther back from those things so that we can be impartial and neutral if things could come back to us, she said. I think part of the problem is not understanding his role and getting too emotionally involved to be impartial. In other words, Michael Williams' sin on the Medford 549C board is to be paying attention. Is to be paying attention. And not just sitting down and shutting up and waiting to be fed a load of BS from Brett Champion or some other Medford 549C school district thing. That's what it seems to be. And I have talked to other people who have been on school boards other than 549C. Oh, you talk to a teacher? Oh, you're not supposed to do that. Everything is supposed to be through the superintendent. And then you supervise the superintendent, that sort of thing. It's like, wait a minute. Do you think that people run for school board and that people vote for school board members so that they can be mushrooms to be fed Bolstein from the administration and the ideologically oriented teachers' unions? You think that's your job on a school board? If the Oregon School Board Association says that you're really not supposed to be that involved or talking to teachers or talking to school resource officers or anything else, maybe what we should do is stop going to and stop letting your school board members be trained by the Oregon School Board Association. Sounds like another one of those consensus groups that gets together where truth goes to die. So, Michael Williams, Real American salute for you. Don't put up with this... Don't put up with this baloney in which you're not supposed to really know what's going on. You're just the school board, right? Oh, my goodness. Break down that wall. You know, a school board member should have access to absolutely anything that goes on in that school. They are the elected citizens' representatives of everything that goes on in those gosh-forsaken schools. It shouldn't be everything that just ends up, coming out of the superintendent's press release. Sorry. I mean, you can get something from him, too. But, if you have different intelligence, you have different intelligence. This is the Bill Myers Show, and you're on KMED and 99.3 KBXG.
Need a new Iron Bowl trailer? Stop by Two Dogs Fabricating. Iron Bowl has instant rebates on 2024 Iron Bowl trailers now through the end of July. There's an instant $750 rebate on 2024 Iron Bowl 12 to 16-foot dump trailers in stock, and a $500 rebate on remaining equipment trailers from 16 to 24 feet. The 2024 model year-end clearance on Northstar-made Iron Bowl trailers ends July 31st. Go see Two Dogs Fabricating on Ryan Way, off Sage in Medford, and at twodogsfab.com.
Latest news brought to you by locally owned and operated Artisan Bakery Cafe in South Medford. It's a full-service cafe offering breakfast, lunch, and specialty coffees. You'll be wowed one bite at a time.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. A new statewide coalition of environmentalists want to add an environmental rights amendment to the Oregon Constitution, enshrining the right to a healthy environment in the Bill of Rights. Proponents say healthy environment rights is key in the era of human-made climate change. Opponents proponents say an amendment would make lawfare easier for environmentalists, essentially allowing them to control all land use in the state. The Oregon Department of Forestry said Monday it's ordered crews through the Oregon National Guard to contain and help put out over 100 wildfires across the state, several that have grown to megafire status of over 100,000 acres. Your tax dollars at work. The Measure 110 hotline costs the state $130,000 a month to run. According to the Oregon Health Authority, this year the hotline received 73 calls from people with Measure 110 citations, translating into about $10,700 per call. Bill London, KMED News.
When you choose a contractor, how do you know you're getting the best? Anyone can claim to be the area's top, but numbers don't lie. When you hire Clouser Drilling, you're getting a company that has 1 million feet, 4,600 wells, 53 years, and four generations drilling here in Josephine and Jackson County. Clouser Drilling has six licensed drillers and four modern drill rigs, giving customers confidence in one great product. The number's 541-476-7795. The name's Clouser. Contact Clouser Drilling today.
Joel here with another Butler Money Saving Truck Deal. Get $4,300 in Ford rebate, get another $1,000 in Ford Trade Assistance cash, plus $900 in Ford Finance cash, and I'll tack on a $3,800 Butler Ford discount for a total savings of $10,000 off a 2024 Ford F-150 4x4 Crew Cab, or buy a new 2024 Ford Bronco Sport for less than $27,000 when you have a qualifying competitor SUV. Also, I've got low interest rates, well, on everything. Edges, Escapes, certified pre-owned Explorers, Broncos, you name it. Butler says yes to $10,000 off on trucks. Butler says yes to saving thousands on Ford Broncos. Butler says yes to low interest rates. And Butler says yes for more for your trade. Butler Ford and Truck Center, rated number one Ford store in Oregon by Google. Just 12 short minutes south of Medford, right off of exit 19, where we've got the selection you desire and the guest experience you require.
36 monthly lease payments at 7,500 miles per year with 7,500 cash or trade due at signing, excluding tax, license, saddle, and 250 dealer down fee with vehicle count cost of $42,884. 72 monthly payments of $15,15 per thousand finance. All financing on approved credit.
Patriot Electric brings power to the people with Generac generators, and one of those people is particularly energized. Congratulations to Dennis Shalapi of Beagle, who won Patriot Electric's Summer Generac Generator Giveaway. Patriot Electric, Bi-Coastal Media, and New Wave Digital Solutions thanks those who entered the contest for a free Generac generator. And again, congratulations to Dennis. Patriot Electric, your authorized Generac dealer and contractor, brings energy independence to Rogue Valley residents. Power to the people by Patriots.
Welcome to the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Give Bill a call at 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
Going off the rails on a crazy train. It seems that way every day that you check out the news here. But it is Wheels Up Wednesday, and you can go off the rails with Eric Peters, 770-5633, to join in. Eric, how the heck you doing this morning? Welcome back, sir.
Oh, thank you for having me. I love the bumper, and it expresses exactly how I feel. I'm beginning to miss the senile man.
Yeah, it was a few weeks ago when people were talking about, oh, we got to get rid of Joe. We got to get rid of Joe. We got to get rid of Joe. And I was mentioning, and I think you and I were both mentioning a little bit of that. Shut up, you know?
Yep.
It's like, because no matter what happens, whoever they put in will have a better chance of trying to keep an orange man out of the White House. Not that orange man is God, not saying that, but certainly a far cry better than what we're looking at right now. And already right now, the controlled polls, Eric, have you noticed that already they're saying,
yep,
the races are tightening. It's just like,
sure,
it's like magic. This is a person, Kamala Harris, who couldn't get arrested in the Democratic Party about 3 weeks ago. And then all of a sudden is the saving. This is the savior of what we're going to do to save democracy. It's like, yikes. It just makes my teeth hurt, you know?
Well, sure. You know, instead of squabbling amongst themselves as they were, now they're coalesced around their candidate, who, of course, wasn't elected or selected by anybody except the inner party poobahs. And in doing so, they have managed to take away probably what was Trump's most potent weapon, which was Biden's age and incompetence. And now they can wheel that around on the orange man.
Yeah.
You know, previously, Trump looked pretty young compared to Biden. But now, you know, they can look at him and say, look, this guy he's pushing 80. And, you know, we all saw, hint, hint, what happened when we elected a guy who was exactly as old as Trump is right now 4 years ago. So what's going to happen in a year or two to Trump.
Yeah, and arguably, though, Trump's in total control of his faculties, you know, just by watching the guy. I mean, the guy can sit there and riff for an hour and a half. Just it astounds me. But
well, it astounds me, too. But biology is biology, and he's in great shape now. But what shape might he be in 2 years? I'm not saying anything against him. I'm just saying that is the weapon, one of them, that the left is going to use. And I think it's going to be a potent one. Mm-hmm. And now, too, he's lost the other weapon, which was that Biden was not only old, he was an old white guy. Well, they got rid of the old white guy. And now they've got a woman, and not only a woman of color, against the old white guy.
Yeah, it's like, be careful what you ask for, folks. And I remember when everyone was calling for Biden to be off the ticket, and we should have been going the other way in my view, because they were not going to Amendment 25 him. It was pretty obvious that wasn't going to happen, and it's still not going to happen from what we can understand. But, you know, sometimes when your enemy is screwing up, let him, you know?
That's wise counsel. I know. We want to talk about some other things that went off the rails, like the Toyota engine fiasco.
Yes, I would. And one of the things about Toyota, it was always the one car manufacturer, maybe one or two car manufacturers, that is it reliable? Of course. It's a Toyota, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah, I mean, that was the chief reason, arguably, that people would buy cars like Corollas and Camrys, which were, you know, historically not anything particularly exciting to look at or even to drive, but they were really good cars, you know, and that mattered. You know, you bought one of those things and you had a sense of security, and it was justified because you could put 15, 20, 25 years on one of those things and not have any problems. And
300,000 miles on a Toyota 4Runner like what we have at the radio station, not unusual at all. You know, you do your maintenance, you're good. 400, 500,000, not unheard of, too. You can see the stories about this all the time. That's solid, unexciting, but solid, right? That sort of thing. Well, I have been looking at mechanics blogs, and we got some problems in the Toyota world, and that is just astounding. Now, not to say that Toyotas did not have some problems. I remember even the old V6s, like, would go prior to the 4Runner that we had. They had some head gasket problems and a few other things, but they got that figured out. They really did.
Yeah.
Now we're having problems because of the replacement for displacement V6, right? Or is it the V6 to the V4? And I've read this in many sources. They're starting to see some problems. What's going on?
Well, there's essentially a massive recall. Toyota is going to put new engines in something like 100,000 Tundra pickups and the Lexus equivalent SUV, which uses the same engine, which is their new 3.4 twin-turbo V6 engine. And they've had some manufacturing problems. It's still kind of opaque what those problems are, but apparently the engine self-destruct. It gets more interesting because I've discovered that it's not just happening with an engine that was built at one plant. It's happening with the engine, which is assembled at two different plants. And my thesis on this, and this is just, you know, based on my years of experience in the car business, is what's happened is that Toyota, like all the other car companies, has had to rush into production these new turbo hybrid configurations in order to comply with the latest and pending federal FATWAs. And they don't have the time that they used to have to prove these engines. You know, they used to make many pre-production prototypes. That was a term that within the industry for something that the public never got their hands on.
And they would just go out there and run them to death in every kind of condition just to see how they would perform in real life, in the real life performance, right? That kind of thing.
Yeah, and it wasn't just the vehicles either. You know, if you're talking about a new engine, you're talking about new tooling, new manufacturing processes, all those kinds of things. You know, GM was infamous back in the 70s for rushing engines and processes into production, and you had fiascos like the early Vega engines. Remember those?
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, and, you know, that happened because GM was cheap and didn't care and was just trying to get things out. I don't think the Toyota is being cheap. I think Toyota is under pressure, and they were like, we got to get this thing into production.
And this had to do with getting rid of the V8, right? You can't have the V8 because of carbon dioxide pollution, right? That kind of thing.
Yeah, correct. You know, right now I'm driving. They just dropped off the other day the new Land Cruiser. You know, the Land Cruiser's been out of production since 21. They brought it back, but the new model does not have a V8 anymore. It has a turbo hybrid four-cylinder engine configuration. And you're seeing this across the spectrum. It's not just Toyota. It's every manufacturer that's doing this. And it's because they have to do it, because it's the only way that they can continue to sell vehicles, period, that aren't electric.
So what's happening with this V6? Is it that, it's losing head gaskets? Is it spinning bearings? What are the problems that they're having with these twin-turbo V6s?
Is that there is debris. Now, it's unspecified debris, whether it's the result of the engine tearing itself apart internally or whether it's the result of shavings during the manufacturing process finding their way inside the engines. But these metal shavings are not good for a running engine, and they cause catastrophic damage, and the only fix is to replace them. And good on Toyota for doing that, but this is going to be devastating for their reputation, and frankly, I think it's going to be devastating for the people who own these vehicles, because, you get a vehicle, and it's new, and you have to put a new engine in it. See what happens to the resale value of that thing down the road.
Because the reputation of it ends up dropping. So it's like puncturing the Toyota, the aura of invincibility, that kind of thing.
Yeah, sure. Even if the engine that they're putting in, is free from defects and it runs just fine, people are going to be concerned. Wouldn't you be concerned? If you were in the market for a used one of these things, you might hesitate because you think, I don't know if I want to be the one who buys this thing. Whereas, as you said before, people who bought the old V6 4Runners and Tacomas and the V8 Land Cruisers, the last thing you ever worried about was the engine, unless, the person who owned it before you had abused it on purpose.
Yeah. Other than that, you worried about maybe the body rusting away from around the Toyota drivetrain because it was so reliable,
Yep.
Kind of like the Pontiac 3800, the 3.8 General Motors engine, that Buick engine we were talking about the other day, would outlast the body in so many of these places, right?
Yeah, they're incredibly tight, incredibly durable. You do a compression test on one of those Corolla or Camry four-cylinder engines with 150,000 miles on it, and they have the same compression as a new engine.
Yeah, they're just that good. And so this is at risk now. And every now and then I'll watch Scotty. I mentioned you probably watch Scotty every now and then too, right? Scotty Kilmer.
Yep, I love Scotty.
Scotty goes, I'm here. Yeah. Yep. You don't want everyone to do this. You got to wave your hands back and forth every time you're talking.
Yep.
That kind of thing. I love him.
He's the manic mechanic.
My mom says, how can you listen to that guy? I said, he's fun. It's a guy's thing. I think it must be. And women don't like Scotty, but guys do. But he brought up something, and I think you would probably agree with this, though, is that when there's a major change with a brand new engine, you're just smarter and better off if you're not the guinea pig, unfortunately. That's where we are right now.
Oh, right? That's an axiom. I've counseled people to heed that advice for as long as I've been doing this. Never be the first one in line when it comes to a new engine or, frankly, a new model of anything. Wait and see what happens.
New transmission, that's another one, especially now that they're going to the continuously variable transmission design for everything, too, for that matter.
Any of it, because you don't know. And again, now they're doing CAD and they're doing computer simulations to get the data that used to be gleaned from having a vehicle, a pre-production vehicle, out there in service for a long time, being used under all kinds of conditions. Real-world data is replaced now by all of these computer programs, and computer programs just cannot account for everything that might go on in the real world.
Oh, I didn't realize that. You mean that they're just running the engines through computer models like they do with climate change models?
Well, not entirely, but yeah, they are relying on that, in the development process, and as well as when they actually build the things, rather than get them out there and put them into the hands of test drivers and just have them be driven all over the place.
Yeah.
Instead of that, they rely on these simulations, and then they base their projections on the simulations.
Is there any evidence that the twin-turbo Toyota V6, which is having these problems with the shavings, and they're going to recall a bunch of them, and they'll replace them, and I'm glad Toyota will make them good. You're right. It's a good company, okay? Is there any evidence that the engines are suffering from the twin-turbo, that we're just boosting everything and trying to get 400 horsepower out of something that would be lasting a long time at 200 horsepower?
Well, not that I'm aware of, but it certainly doesn't make things better to increase the stress on an engine that may have some kind of an internal weakness, right? Mm-hmm. And, the turbo adds boost, which is pressure. So all of the internal parts within that engine are under significantly more pressure. It's kind of analogous to the pressure that a diesel engine deals with, where you have very high compression ratios. But the diesels historically were built with beefier, sturdier blocks, cranks, and all the other internal parts. And they had the additional advantage of the fuel. In addition to being a fuel, it was also a lubricant, which helped to deal with some of the pressure issues. Gas-powered engines don't have that advantage.
Well, I was looking at some engine teardown videos of these hyper-boosted 3- and 4-cylinder engines. Mm-hmm. And what's surprising to me is when they're being torn down. I know General Motors has a pretty famously horrible 3-cylinder engine, which is blowing up left and right on so many of the cars. It's like a 1.4, I think is what it is.
1.2, if I'm remembering
correctly. 1.2. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Three cylinders, and they would tear them down, and you would look at them, and they would have a turbocharger on them, you know, to try to get some extra boost out of them. I think they're in the Buicks. I think they put them in the Buicks and a few
other. Yeah, Chevy Trax, I think, mm-hmm. that
yeah,
also.
Yeah. And you're seeing that the size of the bearing material on the connecting rods, on the crankshaft, everything is very thin. And
yep.
very thin, very narrow. Now, I'm sure they're trying to make the engine as light as possible because of the weight issues, weight being about mileage and all the rest of it. But here it is. You already have a small engine. You're putting it in a relatively heavy crossover, right? And then you throw a turbocharger on top of that, and you're keeping the bearing, you know, the bearing materials on the crankshafts and the connecting rods very narrow. When, if anything, you should be beefing those things up a little bit for longevity and good service.
Yeah, it's a compounding problem, isn't it? You know, the surface area is smaller, and now you concentrate more force on that smaller surface area, which exacerbates the problem.
Yeah.
You know, and this is not just the only problem. You know, if you looked at a new car owner's manual, you may notice that all the manufacturers are using a 0W weight engine
yes.
oil now.
I saw that. I was in the car parts store the other day. You know, 0W10, 0W15, 0W20 on the high side. For some of this stuff. It's like, you're putting water.
And the reason for that is, you know, if there is a slight but important gain from the point of view of regulatory compliance to be achieved as a result of reducing the friction, the resistance inside the engine with these really, really thin, weight oils. But, of course, that has potential problems for you down the road because those super, super lightweight oils may not provide the protection internally that we are used to with the heavier grade oils.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where you're putting the equivalent of slippery water into the engine, into the crankcase, huh?
And this is, again, to get back to the core point here, you know, the chief customer now of the auto industry is the government. You know, we're all in second place.
That's a hell of a note there. Eric Peters here, epautos.com, automotive journalist. You have a question or a comment on anything we've been talking about, or maybe you have a vehicle you're looking at or a question too, 770-5633. Eric, I'll get the calls cleared, and we'll get right back on with you, and let's continue. Plus, I want to talk with you about your latest review, and also, I noticed you threw up something about the vintage vet. Gosh.
Yep.
That looks so good, but we'll talk about that coming up. Hi, this is Bill Meyer, and I'm with Charisse from No Wires Now, your Dish Premier local retailer. It's time to switch to Dish.
If you have DirecTV or cable TV, call me today to see how I can save you money. Plus, I'll lower your internet and cell phone bills.
And those offers in the mail from Dish, you can go through No Wires Now for those.
Call me at 541-680-5875.
Call Charisse like I did or visit their showroom off Biddle Road in Medford, nowiresnow.com. Restrictions apply. Call for details. Internet and cell phone service not provided by Dish.
I Feel the Earth Move is a pop hit recorded by Carole King in 1971. If your house has sloping floors, cracks in walls, or doors and windows that are not shutting smoothly, you may not have felt the earth move, but you can bet it's happening. Call Millett Construction for a free inspection and estimate to level your house and fix the water issue that's causing the problem. By the way, the flip side of the 45 was even a bigger hit. It's too late, so don't wait. Visit MillettConstruction.com. CCB number 32787.
It's heating up outside. Hi, this is Lisa from Kelly's Automotive Service in Grants Pass in Medford. And now is the time to check your air conditioning and cabin air filters. A clogged filter can affect the performance of your air conditioning, and you want your family breathing the freshest air possible. As summer goes on, suppliers start charging more for Freon, so now is a great time to get in. Call us for an appointment today. You can find us online at kellysautomotive.com. Kelly's Automotive Service, where we service your vehicle but take care of you.
The Bill Meyer Show on 106.3 KMED.
6:53, Eric Peters, Wheels Up Wednesday. Mm-hmm. We're back onto it, Eric, here, and let's roll into David. David, you wanted to, you're our resident mechanic here that calls in, and you wanted to talk about that comment I had about these small three-cylinder engines being turbocharged, and then you see them torn apart, and they're very, very small bearings, you know, on the crankshafts. It doesn't look like it'd be long-life engines. What are you thinking about that?
Well, yeah, I just was going to say, you know, and it kind of ties into Toyota, too, is that there have been a lot of changes to comply with the EPA and for weight and stuff. But at the same time, you know, there's always that push to make sure that things don't last as long as older engines. You know, I mean, it doesn't weigh but a couple grams to make the bearings like Eric's talking about that would actually support that boost, you know. But Toyota, I got to say, you know, Toyota, they did a lot. They did a lot of the things back in, like, I would say about 08. You know, they really did the same thing the other companies did with reducing the quality of the components around the car. You know, you used to get, you know, 200,000 miles out of, like, you know, a lot of the bearings from the drivetrain and belt bearings, things like that. You know, and if you look around the Obama years forward, the Toyotas, all the bearings go about 80,000 miles. And, you know, I mean, there's a significant failure.
So, and you know this because you work on this stuff, right? You work on it.
The 86 Camry came in a couple weeks ago. 250,000 miles. You know, almost every part on that car is still original. Almost nothing had been changed on that car. The whole car. It was incredible, you know.
On an 86 Camry. Hey, David, I appreciate the take on that. What do you think about that, Eric? He's saying that, well, it almost seems to be like everyone's.
The problem is those cars were too good. You know, and here's the reason that's a problem is that people realized they were really good cars and they would just keep driving them. Because why would you sign up for a new car payment when your 10 or 15 year old car is perfectly fine? And, you know, you have every reason to believe, hey, I could drive this car easily for another 5 or even 10 years. And, you know, I'm not really interested in signing up for a $500 a month car payment. That's a problem if you're in the business of trying to sell new cars.
Yeah. But as you say in this article, that Toyota may have this problem, but, you know, the whole industry is having this problem right now, essentially.
Absolutely.
Being compliance
and
cars.
The whole industry, as Dave says, has kind of recognized the problem that they had, which is that people who used to buy a new car roughly every 3 to 5 years, depending, but that was typical 30 years ago, are now keeping their cars for twice or more as long. The age of the typical car that's in service right now as a daily driver is about 14 years old, and that's a record. And, you know, it's a real problem if you base your business on turnover. If you think you're going to be selling people a new car every 4 or 5 years and they only come into the showroom once every 15 or 20.
Yeah. Well, my daily driver is 14 years old, oddly enough, as you were talking about, right there on the national average. And let me tell you, I change oil and maintain it religiously. I want to keep it that way. And by the way, I don't do the 6,000-mile oil changes with you could do a 6,000. No, forget about it.
Well, you can. It depends on how long you want to keep your vehicle. I'm the same way. You know, I think the reason that my 22-year-old going on 23-year-old pickup still runs like new is because I change the oil every 3,000 miles. I also do other maintenance to it, like change out the clutch fluid. That's important. That's something a lot of people forget. I change out the brake fluid. I do all of those jobs once a year minimally, despite what the service schedule says. Same with regard to the gear lube. I change that about every 30,000 miles. And as a result of doing those things, my truck still drives like a new truck, and I hope it continues to drive that way for many years to come.
And you even talked about in one of your articles on EP Autos the other day that even if you had to completely rebuild the drivetrain on that, you would do it for about 10 grand. I think is all it would cost you, about 10,000.
That's like in a worst-case scenario. Like, let's say that I had to put a new engine in it plus a new transmission and replace most of the you know, the major operating parts that make it go. I could do that for 10 grand. And does it make more sense to me financially to put 10 grand in a truck as opposed to going out and spending 30 grand minimum for anything that's remotely comparable? And the answer to me is no.
Speaking of trucks, is there any drive, is there any push at this point to maybe get a mini truck, a true mini truck going on again?
Well, it's the obstacles that are more relevant. You can get mini trucks everywhere else except here, and you can actually get decent, affordable, low-cost trucks. I think a couple of weeks ago, you and I talked about the Hilux Champ, which is sort of a decontented version of the Hilux.
Mm-hmm.
It has a cab, and then it has sort of a flat bed out back that's configurable. You can make it into anything that you want. And the base price on that, and this is a vehicle that's about the size of a current Tacoma, as they market it in this country, that you can pick up for about $13,000, except here.
Except here. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, that's the land of the free, right? The land of the free.
Right.
Let me talk with Steve. Hey, Steve, you're on with Eric Peters.
Yeah. Hey, you know, the thing with a turbocharger, it's a variable displacement device. And, you know, the basis of that is there's only so much energy in an amount of fuel and air. So if you want to get more energy out, you have to varied the displacements some way, shape, or form. I mean, a four-cylinder engine has so much displacement. A V8 has so much, so it has more power. Well, using a turbocharger, if you double the displacement by by increasing the pressure by 13 psi, you have increased the displacement by about 60%. Mm-hmm. But you've increased the pressure on the lower end. That's what you're talking about.
Yep.
I put a turbocharger on a 1975 Dodge three-quarter ton pickup that had a 360 LA in it that was dramatically underpowered and made that thing work really well with the problem of burning holes in pistons and a few other things. But back in those days, I could fix it. You know, I could pull the pan off. I could change out the piston in, you know, three, 4 hours in my spare time. And I had a 10-foot camper and a boat that I pulled behind the thing. And with the turbocharger and a 6-pound boost, I could easily, you know, do anything I wanted to until they took the lead out of the gasoline.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm glad you mentioned the amount of boost, because 6 pounds is nothing by today's standards. You know, that's a moderate amount of boost, and that amount of boost on a V8 will make substantial power. But what they're doing, they're running like 18, 19, 20 pounds of boost now on these little four-cylinder engines, which is the kind of thing that you used to only see in very high-performance cars. And now we're talking about grocery getters, crossovers, and vehicles like that.
Eric, we appreciate you coming on this morning to talk about what's going on. And before you take off, we want to... Well, discuss what you were driving, and it's the Mini.
Oh, what you're soon not going to be able to drive, which is a neat little wagon. It's the Mini Clubman, which is a little bit longer version of the Mini that everybody's familiar with, and it has a pair of cute individually opening rear Dutch doors. And Mini's going to stop offering that for sale after the end of this year, and I think for two reasons. One, you know, wagons have never been particularly popular for whatever reason in this country. But I think the other thing that was much more fatal to this car was that it was just too pricey. It's about $36,000, because Mini has tried to position itself as a luxury brand, as opposed to what Mini once was when it was still a British brand. It's currently owned by BMW, which was, you know, hey, a cute, affordable little economical runabout.
Yeah.
If they knocked the price down by about 10 grand, and they could do that by eliminating a lot of the higher-end features that the thing comes with, and you could buy something like that for, say, $24,000 or $25,000, I bet it would have sold really well.
But not at 37, which is what the Clubman's going for, right?
Exactly. You know, that's a lot for a little car. And especially since it doesn't have that much more room than the Mini four-door hatchback. A little more, but not much more. The main thing that sells it is that it's different and cute, which it is. It's a really fun little car, but gosh, it's so expensive that it just kind of pushes a lot of people who might like it out of the market for one.
But you had a lot of fun with this, and there's an amazing amount of horsepower coming out of that 2-liter four banger, huh?
Yeah, and you know, here's another selling point for it. It still comes with a relatively appropriately sized 2.0-liter four-cylinder engine, as opposed to the current 2- and 4-door hatchback Minis, which have a standard 3-cylinder. I think it's a 1.3-liter turbo 3-cylinder engine.
Uh-huh. Boy, I can't wait to see what happens when the Trabant is then reintroduced to the United States of America. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, I can't wait till they. What are they going to do with my next lawnmower? Is it going to have? I don't know what the displacement will be with a turbo direct injected hybrid Briggs & Stratton engine.
Yeah, but even then, you had a lot of fun with the Clubman for sure. The one thing though that is still going against it is that wagons are just not popular anymore in the United States, are they?
Not in this country. It's just a cultural thing. I think probably part of it has to do with it's a feedback loop. The widespread prevalence of these jacked up SUVs, trucks, and even crossovers. And if you have a wagon, especially one like this Mini that rides much lower to the ground, you kind of feel overmatched. You know, in Europe, you almost never see these hulking huge SUVs and big trucks like we have here. Cars are much smaller over there. And I think that may account for the reason why wagons are so much more popular in Europe than they are here.
All right. I'd stay away from the 3-cylinder, though, still. Seriously.
Yeah, me too. I mean, that's a no-go for me. I'm conservative and suspicious about things, and that makes me feel a little nervous.
All right. Let's grab a couple more calls before we take off. Here we go to the next line. Hi, good morning. You're on with Eric. Question, comment? Let's hear it.
Yeah, good morning. Hey, the new Toyota Tundras, mm-hmm. You know, they all into that 4-cylinder. Is that the same motor that they're having problems with?
The current Tundra?
Yeah, or no, I'm
it's
sorry,
not a
four Tundra,
cylinder.
But,
it's not
Tacoma.
A four cylinder. It's a 3.4-liter V6 engine. The one that I'm driving is the Land Cruiser, the new Land Cruiser that they've just reintroduced after being off the market for 3 years, and it has the 2.4-liter four with a turbo and a mild hybrid.
And what is the type of Tundra or the truck that you were talking about, caller? Which one?
I'm sorry, it's Tacoma.
Tacoma. Okay.
Yep. Right. Yeah. The Tacoma, the new one, no longer has the V6 that everybody loved. Instead, it has a turbo 2.4.
And is that the one that they're having the problem with? Blowing up?
No, the one they're having the problem with is in the full-size Tundra pickup, which is the 3.4-liter V6 engine, twin-turbo.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, hey, thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much. Your Tundra's okay for now, or Tacoma. I get them mixed up. I really do.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to keep them straight even for me.
All right. Hi, caller. You're on with Eric Peters. Good morning. Hello. Hi, you're on.
No.
Yeah, that's
Scott
you.
Here.
Yeah, hey Scott, go ahead.
Have you ever dealt or talked to anybody that had issues with getting a parts from China? I have a Mitsubishi, changed the radiator in it, and then 2 years later, a piece of the radiator breaks free,
yep.
Comes up and hits my thermostat.
Yep.
And I'm driving up to Cave Junction, and bam, it overheats and
yep.
destroys the engine. And then you call back to Google there, or the Amazon, and they've got a policy. Well, you got a problem that will fix it, you know, damage from a part, but they never call you back.
Yeah,
imagine
that.
I feel your pain. $4,000
later.
What was that, Eric?
I was going to say, I have been through the same thing. With knockoff parts that are made in China that are of poor quality, and when they fail, typically what you may be able to get them to replace the part, but whatever damage resulted from the failed part, good luck with that.
Yeah, Scott, it's a sad story that we're hearing from quite a few people over the years. It's not just you, it's them, okay? Let me go to the next one, and then we'll probably have to wrap for now. Good morning. Hi, who's this?
Good morning, Bill, and this is Michael Shaw. So listen to you real quickly. I have a 2011 GMC Sierra 2500 HD, and I have to agree with you wholeheartedly. 2021, I put a transmission in there for 6500. 2022, I put a new exhaust system from the headers all the way back, including new cats, for 1800. 2023, I redid the front end, belt pulleys, new water pump for, you know, whatever that was. And I can put a remanufactured engine in this truck for $3,000 after a quarter of a million miles, and I absolutely refuse to pay $70,000 or $80,000 for
yep.
a new pickup.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, keep in mind, too, the peripherals. If a person were to go out and buy that $70,000 truck, then you're on the hook for the insurance on that $70,000 truck. Also, if you live in a state like my state where there's personal property tax applied to vehicles, you'll probably be paying $1,500 a year for the next several years because of the higher average market value of that much newer vehicle.
Yeah, that's certainly one thing I never missed about moving away from California years ago,
mm-hmm.
Eric. Anyway, hey, Michael, we appreciate the take on that. Glad to hear that that's working out there for you. Eric, what do you think you're going to be reviewing next week? I'm looking forward to it, as always.
Well, we've got the Land Cruiser, and I think after that, I'm not sure, but I think it's the VW GTI that's coming next, but we'll have a good conversation, I think, about the Land Cruiser, because it is a very interesting counterpoint to the old Land Cruiser, and not just because it no longer comes with a V8. If you can believe it, they've actually lowered the price, and not by a little. The new Land Cruiser is, wait for it, $30,000 less to start than the old one.
Wow. And now, when it comes to the Land Cruiser, I want to make sure that I get the models right. This is not like the FJ, right? That type.
No. That model's been discontinued.
Okay.
The real confusion is the Land Cruiser versus the Sequoia, and that's one of the reasons that they pulled it from the market, because the old Land Cruiser was very, very close and overlapped too much with the Sequoia, which is a full-sized SUV. This one's smaller, and they have made it a little bit smaller again for this new iteration. It's no longer got a third row, and of course, it no longer has a V8 either.
All right. Well, I look forward to hearing that review next week for sure. And keep up on epautos.com. Eric, great talk as always. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate your having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. This is KMED and KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass.